I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Sunday, November 22nd, 2020, and this is episode 95 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. This week's best thing is that the new anthology, Under a Winter Sky, came out on Thursday the 19th, and it is doing really well. It's a number one bestseller in the fantasy anthology category on Amazon. So when you get that, you get the little orange flag, which I've never gotten before. It's my first number one bestseller on Amazon in a category that I'm aware of. And it's super exciting. It got a bestseller status on Barnes & Noble. And it's just been great. The launch was great. I mean, this is the power of coming together with a bunch of other authors and putting something out there. And you get exposed to new readers and you get the advantage of everyone's, you know, reader base coming together. So it's super exciting. If you haven't gotten your copy, you can. There's a link in the show notes. You can go to lpen.co/UAWS under a winter sky. And there's a contest going on that will be going on for another few days. And we're giving away signed bookmarks, not bookmarks, book plates that are signed by all the authors. They are currently somewhere in Canada trying to get to Kelly Armstrong. We started this process over a month ago and, sending them, you know, signing them all, sending them to the next person. And then when Grace was announced, we're going to send them to her. So it might take a little while to actually get the book plates, but I think it will be really cool to have them signed by everybody. And there's a grand prize of a $10 gift card to the bookstore of your choice. So check out the link and check out the contest and the anthology. My contribution is Echoes of Ash and Tears, the third novella of Earthsinger Chronicles. And yeah, I talked about somewhere, I don't know where, it's been a blur, but how difficult it was to make sure that that was a prequel to the entire series, as well as still being book 3.5 and a lead-in, like a bridge book between books 3 and 4. Speaking of book 4, I did turn in the copy edits last week. Did I talk about that before? And that was really cathartic. Yeah, I turned them in on Monday. They were due the 16th. So last copy edits for this series. I mean, the series is done. Like, I didn't make any big changes. I had spent so much time going over that book with a fine-tooth comb that it was really just very minor things and then responding to the copy editor's questions about where they arose. And when I turned it in, my agent gets copied on those emails and she was like, "Are you excited? You should celebrate. This is a huge achievement, you know, the end of the series." And like with everything else, like I acknowledge it, but I'm not really able to celebrate it in the way that probably other people do. I don't know. I mean, I do get to see it again with the past pages and then the arcs. And then of course we have the launch, but it's so far away. You know, I think that I felt that maybe when I finished writing it and I actually turned it in. But I mean, the copy edits really is this last hurrah. Like I went back and forth many times about whether I should write an epilogue to the last book. I had intended to write an epilogue. I have a prologue and I was going to do an epilogue as sort of a bookend to that prologue. And when it came time, I was just like, I really love where I ended the last chapter. I feel like that's the end of the book. And the epilogue wouldn't have added anything. It would have given you that closure, that closed that door to something that is unanswered in the book. But at the end of the day, I just sacrificed that little bit of closure because I think that the last chapter is the closure for the series, you know, as a whole. And I'm so proud of that book. It was so hard to write. I was on Twitter and someone had posted a picture of the first three and said he was excited for the fourth book. And I was like, yeah, you know, that fourth book gave me more than one gray hair, but it's my favorite book of the series. And it's probably my favorite book that I've written. And I did get gray hairs. If you're in the video, like, I don't have very many, but at least I've got like four or five that I can count on, you know, the top of my head that I can see. And like four of those came during Requiem. Also, another milestone, I hit 500 YouTube subscribers. So everyone on YouTube, thank you. I appreciate that. I really am grateful for everyone who watches and listens and engages in some way. And I hope that you get something out of it. So thank you. My writing update. I finished the first draft of my novel, the 1920s fantasy heist book. I finished it on Friday the 20th. It came in at just under 45,000 words. So not a true nano. I've contemplated spending the next, you know, couple of days trying to get an extra 5,000 words, but that's why I didn't want to do a real nano in the first place, because I didn't want to have that pressure of hitting the, you know, the absolute deadline. So I think I'll just let that go. But yes, the first draft is done. It's very short. I know my first drafts do tend to be like half the length of the final book, and I was targeting 80 to 90,000 words for this book anyway. So, yay. Another one of those things, like my friends were like, oh, you should celebrate. I'm like, well, I can't celebrate this because this is really just the raw materials. This is not, I don't feel like this is anything worth celebrating. It's just now I can actually start to write this book because I've gotten through the first draft. Interestingly enough, the last chapter, the last pages, this voice came to me. You know, I've been complaining about I haven't been able to really find the voice and the narrative voice. And I've been playing around with different things and different ideas. Something came to me at the very end, like the last few paragraphs. And I was like, is this it? I think this might be it. Took 45,000 words to find it, but this is why we fast draft. Yet another reason. So yeah, I started hearing this voice and it came through and it was kind of what I'd been looking for. So now, yeah, like I said, this the actual work of writing the book begins. The revision begins. And it was also interesting that this week in Pitch Wars, we had to give our mentee the edit letter. And so that was another process. And it had me thinking about edit letters and revision and how we approach this, because part of giving the edit letter, you know, our mentee, you know, is a new writer, has not been published before and hasn't received an edit letter before. And so our letter was long. But I think edit letters tend to be long. And in it, I was telling her, I was trying to like soften the blow because I know how much of a blow it is. When we write a book, you write a manuscript and you get it to a point where you're going to either query it, to send it to an editor. If you are self-publishing, enter something like Pitch Wars, you've gotten it to the place where you think it's good. You think you've done as much as you can do and you're ready to let other people have feedback on it. And, you know, part of getting it to the best place you can is believing that it's really good. And when you get a long edit letter back, you're like, oh, this was not nearly as good or as ready as I thought it was. And I knew that she was going to have that reaction because I had that reaction. And so part of the edit letter was kind of relaying my experience. You know, but my very first edit letter back in 2014, because I had decided to self-publish. And so I had, you know, Song of Blood and Stone originally was a 50,000 word novella. Now I called it a novella. 50,000 words is really a short novel, but for me, in my head, it was a novella. And I had, you know, tried to find a developmental editor because I knew I needed one. I eventually found Danielle at Double Vision Editorial through one of the listservs I was on. I think it was the Marie Force. It used to be a listserv that was on Yahoo. Now she has a Facebook group. And every once in a while, people will talk about, oh, I'm looking for an editor. Can you give me recommendations? So I found some of those posts and I looked through, you know, I looked through the editors that had been recommended. My criteria at the time was I wanted someone who had worked at a big five publisher, big six at the time, maybe, I don't know, but a New York publisher and had experience in traditional publishing. And so I sort of culled the list down to a few people, and most editors will give you a sample edit either for free or for a small fee. And so I sent, you know, the first couple chapters and did sample edits, and I picked Danielle, who I love, who I still work with to this day. And the first edit letter she sent me, I dug it up so I could review it. It was 8 pages, single spaced, on a book that I thought was really good and it was going to need some tweaks and some polishing, you know. But that was it. And it did not need tweaks and polishing. It needed a lot more than that. And, you know, she's very kind and professional, but clearly laid out the problems that she saw with the book, and also with encouragement, like, I know that you can do this, you know, and with the sandwiching of the good, the positive feedback, and then the things you can work on and take another look at. But I was devastated at the beginning. I was devastated. I went through the stages of writerly grief, and there's a great blog post that someone in the Pitch Wars Facebook group had posted, and I'll link to it too. So yeah, the seven stages of writerly grief. Shock. You know, like shock that this is not the perfect creation or the nearly perfect creation that I thought it was because I had worked really hard on it. Denial. Absolutely not. This person has no idea what they're talking about. I don't know what they're talking about. Like, you don't understand my genius. Like, literally, I thought that. Because there's so much hubris involved in publishing a book and believing that you can write something that other people should read. Anyway, third stage, anger. I got angry too. And I was like, why did I pay so much money for this? You know, I don't know what I was doing. She has no idea what she's talking about. Fourth stage, bargaining. Okay, read it over again. Maybe I can, okay, maybe a point. Maybe she has a point there. Maybe. Fifth stage, depression. Because you're thinking, if my editor has a point, that means I have to fix it. And I don't know how to do that. I can't do it. It's too much. I'm the worst writer ever. This book needs to be thrown into the trash can. I don't know why I thought I could do this in the first place. What was I thinking? And then the sixth stage, reflection. After a couple of days of going through the other stages, you're thinking, things start to spark. And it's like, well, maybe, what if I do this? Or what if I do that? Like, if I move this around, if I change this character. And then finally, acceptance. Okay. 80% of what she had to say was right. At least 80%. And I just need to figure out how I'm going to approach the revision and how I'm going to change it. And I'm grateful that I had such a good editor who showed me all these things that were wrong with my book. Yeah, this blog post was so on target for my experience. And I still get really long edit letters from Danielle. But I do appreciate them a lot. So the idea when giving the edit letter to our mentee for Pitch Wars was like, we've been there. I've been there. I kind of go through it every time I get an edit letter, go through all of those stages. And we know that you can do it. Like after you go through that stage, when you're in that sort of depression stage, when you're like, this is beyond me. Like I have everything I have to fix. I don't know how to do it. The reinforcement is that, yes, you can do it. You are a good writer. You have, like, all of these comments notwithstanding, there is something really great about this and that you have the tools that you need to help to fix it, to revise it, and to make it better. And we're here for you and your community. That's why having a community is so important, because you can't do this alone. It's so hard to do it alone. You need people to go through the stages with. To people to complain about how stupid your editor is, and then to be like, oh, wait, she's right. And then to be like, how am I going to fix this? Come help me brainstorm. And then, does this sound okay? Look at my outline. Look at this. And then finally, you know, all the way up to beta reading and things like that. So I went through kind of memory lane as I was trying to communicate to our mentee that it's okay if you hate us for a while, if you curse our names and think that we're idiots, and then go through all the other stages. Like, I expect that. That's why we're giving you several days to process and go through the emotions that you need to go through. And then we'll have a meeting and talk about it and talk about the steps forward. I was also thinking, because I had recommended, if someone asked me for a developmental editor, I definitely recommend Danielle. Because I think she's helped make me a better writer. She is the freelance editor that worked on my book, all my, just about everything that I've self-published. And sometimes I do have her look at the traditionally published things too, to get her feedback on that. And so over these 5 years of working with her, I just think that she has helped me become a better writer. And so she's also high compliance, and that is important to me. So if you've been listening for a while, you've heard me talk about these personality tests and the Becca Syme class. So there's a DISC personality test, and one of the aspects of personality is compliance, which means, you know, sort of like the compliance officer at a company, like following the rules? How do you adhere to the rules? And of course, this does conflict with my natural sort of anarchism, my anarchic tendencies. But it makes sense to me because I follow the rules that make sense. That if I'm in a situation where I understand why these rules are here and it's for either my good or the common good, then it makes perfect sense to follow them. In other situations, it doesn't, and I don't. But for me, having an editor that's even higher compliance than I am means that I love getting the long edit letters. Like at this point, even though it's painful, it's like, I want to know everything that you found. I want to know every inconsistency. And sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're just misunderstandings, but that's helpful too. Like if I'm not clear and you didn't understand what I was trying to go for, then I can clarify that. That is my catnip. But it occurred to me as I was doing this edit letter for Kayla that if someone who is not high compliance, it could be even more difficult. As difficult as it is for me, and I love this stuff, how is it for someone who is not as eager as I am to dot every I and cross every T and doesn't feel the need to? And, you know, is it necessary? Like, slight tangent, I'm high compliance. One of my very best friends in the world is low compliance, author Inez Johnson. And years ago, we co-wrote a story together. And, you know, I think we work really well together. But at the end, I wanted to go through it like 3 more times. And she was like, oh, no, it's good. And I'm like, ah. So we were doing something on Wattpad. We put it on Wattpad. And because I was like, well, we co-wrote this. And I know how I am. And she knows how I am because we've known each other since we were 17 years old. So she's very patient with me. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to stop you from doing what you want with this. I don't think it's ready. I want to go through it 2 or 3 more times, but I don't have the time because, you know, other things were happening. So I was like, if you want to publish it, like do whatever you want with it, publish it, send it to your newsletter. And I'll use a pen name for my, you know, my name on it. And she was like, yeah, I figured that's what you would say. So at some point she sent it to her newsletter. And at one point we had sent it to my agent, to consider whether to publish it. It's just short. It's too short for the genre that it is. And we would have to lengthen it. But my agent actually really liked it. And which just reinforces, like, there's probably nothing wrong with it. You know, it's just not like good enough for me. Like I'm not happy with it, but I think it's good enough for the marketplace as is, which is where my high compliance is, you know, it's just how I am. And people around me accept me the way that I am, which I'm very grateful. So my point in that tangent was that if someone is not high compliance, is a high compliance editor the right for them, right? The right fit for them? Because I had recommended Danielle to a friend of mine who had contacted me. We were partners in graduate school. She contacted me on Facebook. So shout out to Leela. My grad school, well, I'm not going to go into that. Our thesis was a group project. Take that in for a second. But Leela and I worked really well together. And so she contacted me on Facebook a year or two ago, and she was writing a book, and I was, you know, giving her advice and just sharing knowledge with her. And she asked me for a recommendation for an editor, and I told her about Danielle, and I did try to prepare her. I gave the same spiel that I try to give to every new writer, and especially with someone as comprehensive and detail-oriented as Danielle is, which, again, I love. And so I kind of did the spiel, and then after she got edited, I checked in with her, and I'm like, how's it going? How's your revision? And she was basically like, she was stepping away from the book for a while. And, you know, she's busy. She's got kids. I get it. Sometimes it's just time. But I do feel like the edit letter might have killed her spirit a little bit. And I look back and think, should I have done something different? Should I have prepared her more? I don't know. And I feel bad if that is the case, because I sometimes you go through those stages. If you don't get through all of them, then you can get stuck and think that you're a bad writer and that this book is unfixable. And I don't think very, very few things are unfixable. I mean, it's only unfixable if you don't fix it, right? Like so I look back and try to say, should I have done something different in that situation? Or was my recommendation wrong for her? And I don't know. I don't have the answers to that. Because sometimes it really is just I need time to get back into the mindset to be able to attack this again, because the feedback was overwhelming. So yeah, it's tough. My advice to anyone out there, if you're a new writer and you're approaching being edited for the first time, whether it's a freelance editor who you've hired or a traditional publishing editor who has, you know, kind of chosen you, it's hard, and everyone goes through it, and everyone who has been edited has gone through it in different ways. So community is really important, and seeking out people that you can commiserate with and, you know, get angry with or share your anger with, and who are there to help build you up again and then reinforce that and encourage you to keep going. Because yeah, the only unfixable thing is if the thing that you don't fix. And so I'm approaching my revision. It's too early for me to even think about getting edited. I just have to think about how this book should be a real book and not just a piece of crap on my computer. And I think it kind of will help to kind of talk through it with our Pitch Wars mentee. And because, you know, a revision is a difficult beast. I like to approach it by looking at the book I have and then look at the book that I want. And so review, okay, what is good about this? What are the things that I can keep? What are the things that are inspiring? And then how do I get from this broken down shack to the castle that I had in my mind that I really want to build? Like, what are the elements that I can keep and what are the elements that I have to discard? And I'm going to start that process today. I have a writing session with a friend in a little while, and I'm not going to read over the whole thing. I tend not to do that, but I don't know. I have to see how I'm going to approach this. Which worksheet will I use? Which methodology will I pull out? Which, am I just going to be brainstorming? I haven't figured that out yet. We'll talk about that next week, probably. I did finish reading Mama Day by Gloria Naylor, and I got to the end, and I had known what was going to happen, because she tells you what's going to happen in the beginning of the book. It's not a surprise that what happens to certain characters. But I was like, why was this one of my favorite books? Like, this is a difficult, confusing book. It's a challenging book. And if I had read it for the first time now, it wouldn't be one of my favorites. I mean, the writing is spectacular. It's amazing. And the story is really interesting, but tastes change, you know, like my tastes 30 years ago were just different than what they are now, I guess. I can appreciate the book for the craft and for, you know, the things that I was reading it for that narrative voice and just the way the story unfolds. But afterwards, I was like looking for like articles, and actually found like a JSTOR article talking about it from a scholarly perspective, because I was just like, what was going on in this book and what was happening and why? Like, why? It's really interesting. And maybe I had a better grasp on those things when I was a teenager. Because now I do read just for pleasure in general. I don't tend to read like super challenging books. I want books that make me feel good, because I'm adulting now. And I think that when you're a teenager and you're, you know, like I was reading Atlas Shrugged, and I mean, not even for class. Like, some things were just reading, you know, literature. Part of it was, you know, school, but part of it was just the thing. Like, I didn't read Mama Day for school. I chose to read Beloved for a book report in sixth grade. I don't know why I did that. I wouldn't have done that now. So it's really interesting to look back and see how my tastes have changed. And I think it is just because now I'm a grown up and I've got pressures and struggles. And when I read, I just want to read something fun and entertaining and not super challenging. And I'm not afraid to admit that. Like, someone had recommended a book. I don't even remember which one it was, but it was a very literary book. And I tried to read it, and I was like, honestly, I can't do this right now. Like, this was a few years ago. I'm just not at a point where my brain can handle this. I want to read something much more fun. So currently I'm reading Clockwork Boys by T. Kingfisher, which is hilarious. It's very fun. It's a fantasy. I've read T. Kingfisher before, Paladin's Grace, which I also recommended. There's another story in the same world. I love this world that she's created. It's got all of these different gods and then priests and priestesses. priests and priestesses for those gods, and some of them have paladins. And this book has a paladin, another, it's kind of similar to Paladin's Grace, but totally different story. In that you have this paladin, which is like a knight for the god who has been disgraced in a way and is struggling with that. And then a great, great characters, great character interactions. One of the funniest scenes, like I've read in a very long time, there's a scene where they're riding horses and they don't know how to ride horses. I recommend Clockwork Boys by T. Kingfisher. I can't talk today. I'm still in the middle of it, but I'm loving it, and it's extremely entertaining. So yes, that's it for me for this week. I will be working on the revision of the new book, and hopefully starting to just figure it out, you know? Put in the work, get the butt in the chair. At this point, I think it'll be just hours. You know, it's not going to be a word count goal every day. It's just, I'll work on this for an hour and a half, 2 hours a day until I figure it out. So I hope to talk to you next week, and I hope that you have a wonderful week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your inbox, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch the video episodes on YouTube. I would really appreciate a rating or review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.